Help from Washington for Richard Murdoch, plus a Paul Ryan remark that's not so helpful. The campaign ads that didn't run on 9/11 and the one that did. An ethics complaint against the governor and a controversial get out the vote effort. That plus John Gregg in the kitchen and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 14,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Senate candidate Richard Murdoch sought help from a Washington Republican, and so did Democrat Joe Donnelly. Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn came to Indianapolis in the effort to give Richard Murdoch a boost. They appeared at doctor-owned Ortho Indy Hospital to voice opposition to the president's health care reform and to make it clear what's at stake for Republicans in this election.
This seat, in terms of us achieving a majority in the Senate, is critical.
But it's another big-name Republican who is hurting Murdoch at the moment. Vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan is featured in a new ad from the campaign of Democrat Joe Donnelly in an excerpt from a PBS interview.
Mr. Murdoch's point is that any movement that happens should not come from the Republicans. It should only come from the Democrats.
Yeah, see, I obviously don't agree with that.
And that means it's up to people like Senator Coburn to convince voters that Murdoch's views will change if he gets to Capitol Hill.
I believe in compromise, and I believe Richard will compromise in the best interest of our country, which ultimately will be in the best interest of Indiana.
Murdoch, meantime, was asked to name a Democrat he could compromise with. He said he is only familiar with the Democratic leadership.
And I have to tell you, I don't see many ideas coming from their leadership that are the types of ideas we need.
Is Richard Murdoch off message? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, should we accept Tom Coburn's word that Richard Murdoch will compromise?
Who votes the Republican line, 99% of the time? I don't think so. I mean, obviously, Richard Murdoch's looking at the same polls that Paul Ryan is looking at, and that is that people want to rise above the partisanship, and they want people that can work with the other side of the aisle to get results. Richard Murdoch is clearly not that person. And every time you take the script out from in front of him, he shows his true colors. He doesn't, it's his way or the highway, and he's proud of it. And so is Dr. No. So, you know, I don't care how many times he puts Becky Skillman on to try to make him seem as if he's a real, amiable guy that can work with both sides. It's just simply not true.
Well, I was just going to say, the ad with Becky Skillman tries to send the same message that Tom Coburn was trying to send, that which is that Richard Murdoch can work with other people. But these statements that he's made previously that keep coming up, and then the comment that he made at that event on Monday, he kind of betrays himself, doesn't he?
You know, I don't think this matters one hill of beans. I think that the most voters in Indiana care about the issues that they're worried about in their daily lives, about jobs, Obamacare, the cost of government, getting government off our backs. This election is going to boil down to people worrying about those issues.
You don't think it's about the Luger Republicans?
I don't think it's about process at all. I think people are going to ignore that stuff and are going to concentrate on what affects their daily lives. And the process stuff is all political insider stuff that the public, John Q. public, could care less about. And this is about the difference between, are you for self-reliance or are you for government reliance? That's the issue in this campaign between Donnelly and Murdoch.
Well,
and that's what this is going to boil
down
to.
Some of it's about Luger Republicans who don't want a hardliner.
Oh, sure. I think that's an element. I think Luger Republicans, and as I've said before, I think there are probably some Luger backers who for whom this is not even ideological now. It's personal, and they still feel ill will. Now, clearly, this move to the center is not designed to deal with the latter. It's designed to deal with the former, as you point out, Jim, those who for whom compromise is not a dirty word. And I think polls have suggested that the frustrations that a lot of people have about what they see in Washington on Capitol Hill is the chronic impasse, the gridlock, and the my way or the highway approach on both sides. And so I think there was probably some assessment after the primary, and we often have discussed how people will tack back to the middle, whether they go left if they're Democrats in the primary or right as Republicans come back. The challenge here is it's only been a four-month difference. I mean, politicians have positions that evolve sometimes over decades, but this kind of 180-degree switch in 4 months is a bit abrupt.
Do you, John, think that Richard Murdoch regrets some of the things he said, particularly right after the primary, where he talked about compromise being Democrats coming over to the Republican point of view?
No, I can't put myself in his head in terms of whether he regrets it or not, but I do think that he probably thinks it was politically a mistake to be as harsh as he was and be as absolute as he was. Politics has always been about the art of compromise. We've gotten away from that. I think he understands that inherently, but his positions have put him so far away from that he is having to make a hard turn to try to come back toward the middle, and it's not very becoming, frankly, and I think a lot of people are having a hard time taking that kind of a turn and accepting it. So I think he's still battling an uphill battle.
Yeah, I don't think that he regrets it at all. I think what his position was before and immediately after the primary is what he thinks, and that is the Tea Party approach, his way or the highway. And what he's doing is listening to the handlers telling him he has to tack to the middle. So he does what he says when he has a prepared script in front of him, and you take that script away and the wolf comes out of the sheep's clothing, and there he is.
Well, it does seem, Mike, does it not, that there are folks in Washington who would like to see him sending a more moderate message, and so they're sending help like Tom Coburn?
Look, of course, they want to keep this seat. And as far as John's point is concerned, I know a lot of these Lugar Republicans and are good friends with a lot of them.
See one in the mirror now and then?
Every once in a while. You know, there wasn't anything. I didn't hide that at all during the primary season. But, you know, there's two words that turn that around. When you say these two words to people, they go, oh, yeah, I get it now. It's called Harry Reid. And a lot of these Lugar Republicans are not going to send somebody to vote for make their first vote for Harry Reid, which is what you get with Donnelly. So those people are going to come home on Election Day and vote for Richard Murdoch. And Richard Murdoch learned the hard way, in my opinion, I think John may be right also, that there's a difference between what you say after you come off a tough primary and the euphoria that you had and that kind of thing, and living with the general electorate. And I think he's learned the hard way on that, but he has come around to the point where he better go the other direction.
I think he is what he is, and he's a non-compromiser.
The Romney campaign's comment about the Etch-a-Sketch, you know, you shake it after the primary, and then you can move. Well, the knob only used to probably draw lines kind of to the right constantly. So now the question is, can those buttons draw lines up the middle? And there is a potential for alienating, I guess, the most fervent and zealous portion of the constituency that helped him win the primary, if they may still be attached to the notion that we don't want compromise.
Voters are still more worried about the pocketbook than
they are this stuff. Social Security is unconstitutional, and so is Medicare.
But the Democrats and the super PACs are helping him keep going to that. But he has said that it's not in the Constitution, but he hasn't advocated getting rid of Social Security.
Sure, of course.
Medicare.
He said he'd
protect
it, and he will.
You know, that is a distinction without a difference, okay?
No,
it's the same thing as saying, I didn't really mean it when I said my way or the highway.
He's not
I'm really a nice guy.
Let's move on. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, which candidate do you support in the Senate race? Your choices are A, Joe Donnelly, the Democrat, B, Richard Murdoch, the Republican, or C, Andy Horning, the Libertarian. Remember him? Last week's question was, did the Democratic National Convention make it more likely that you will vote Democrat? 34% said yes, 60% said no, 6% said I didn't watch. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/ IWIR, and look for the poll. The candidates for governor, Mike Pence and John Gregg, suspended their campaign ads Tuesday in honor of the anniversary of the 9/11 tragedy. Gregg said it would be wrong to air ads on a somber day. Democratic Senate candidate Joe Donnelly also suspended his ads Tuesday. Republican Richard Murdoch was the only statewide candidate with ads still running that day. Deputy campaign manager Brose McVeigh says the campaign asked Monday that one of two ads be taken down, but the request came too late for most TV stations to comply. Mike McDaniel, on a scale of lame excuses, rate that one from 1 to 10.
It's good that your question is not slanted in any way, shape, or form. Look, I take them at their word that they try to take one of the ads down. But again, you know, this is process stuff that nobody cares about. I mean, this is a bunch of nothing. And you know, his challengers, the independent commercials against him ran the whole day. I didn't hear anybody claiming that they should be taken off the
air. Nobody knows who to call.
Well, that could be too.
Citizens United at work.
But believe me, there was a run all day, and nobody claimed that that's a problem. Look, I've read polls, political polls, for 40 years now in Indiana. I've yet to see ad rotation on the top of anybody's list.
Well, it makes sense. The presidential candidates stopped their ads for that day, and that's a lead that it's tough not to follow, but there's not really a punishment.
I don't necessarily think it moves the needle as far as voters are concerned. It's just simply tacky. But most of his campaign has been, so I don't see why this would be any different.
Okay. Oh, if all of that's the case, that's still kind of a lame excuse, right?
I'd say that's a 10 on that scale. Because what that implies is, well, we got caught, and so we were going to try to take down one, but we had two in rotation, so they still had obviously not.
They were going to take the negative ad out of rotation to keep the positive
okay,
ad.
Okay, fine. It's still lame. It's 9.5. And the reality,
give it a 10.
The reality is, I think they just forgot that that was the day and that was going to be the protocol.
Or maybe they thought they'd have it open season, too.
Right.
Yeah, I suppose it's a logical explanation that they might have forgotten until the last minute, heated the campaign, but that doesn't mitigate it necessarily.
That's right.
Because what you're describing here, to go back to the earlier question, Mike, you said, well, in the heat of the moment after the primary, you may say things you regret, which suggests maybe a judgment question. Then you have a campaign that hasn't circled 9/11 on the calendar, apparently, and until the last, you know, however many minutes before, hours before the clock strikes midnight, that you say, oh, we better call these TV stations and try to pull it from the lineup. I mean, at what point does...
Do you honestly think that moves the needle one?
No, but what it does, it seems to me...
That's the bottom line here.
Judgment and the way campaigns run, I think, tell a lot about how people govern.
Nothing changes on the bottom line.
It may not change voters, but I bet you can read a lot into how campaigns are run, and that tells you how people run their shops if they're elected.
Moving on, Governor Mitch Daniels is the focus of an ethics complaint filed by Democratic State Representative Charlie Brown. Brown believes the governor misused state resources when he sent out a press release regarding renovations here in the president's office at Purdue University. Daniels will become Purdue's president next year, but Brown is worried current actions by the Republican governor amount to ghost employment. The governor's office labeled the complaint, quote, partisan nonsense. John Ketzenberger, is this more than troublemaking?
Well, I got to say, it's pretty good troublemaking. I don't think it rises to the level of ghost employment by any means. But I have to say that I was a little surprised and taken aback by the vociferous nature of the governor's response when the story came out in the Journal and Courier in Lafayette that these renovations were going on. We've talked before about how it was probably a bad idea for Purdue to pursue this, or at least not to get in touch with the governor beforehand. But to dismiss these things as partisan nonsense when the complainant is Representative Charlie Brown is probably not the right way to respond. I think that you should take it a little more seriously than that.
Well, yet it's going to an ethics commission appointed by the governor. The likelihood that this will amount to anything is not very good.
As a practical matter, I think that's right. And keep in mind that, you know, tens of thousands of state employees are subject to statutes related to ghost employment and whatnot, which is the suggestion here. Mm-hmm. If you're an elected office holder, though, those rules don't apply. As I understand it, you could basically never go to work. You could do whatever you want, and you answer to the voters. So, regardless of how it looks, I think from a legal standpoint, it's fine. The other thing is, because it seems to me this is another public institution with which
a state institution with which the
governor is going to be
dealing. You're the governor, and you're going to criticize what's going on there.
It seems to me if he were to take it, say he were returning to Eli Lilly and Company, and there was some, he was becoming involved in some issue there using the state apparatus to disseminate the message, then that strikes me as a little bit different question.
Yeah. Anything come of this?
No. It's been since March, since the legislature shut down, and Charlie hadn't gotten any public attention, and he wanted some.
And he got some.
You know, you've got somebody who said that they were going to hold their administration to the highest possible ethical standards, okay? Then you get somebody who You get somebody who's appointed by the board that he appointed three members of 2 days before, and then you get this moogie-foogie where he's really the Purdue president, but he isn't the Purdue president. And by the way, he can lobby. He can lobby the government. He can lobby the governor's office.
He got a ruling on that.
By guess who? The guy he appointed. Does that make it ethical?
You can question all of that. Yet it's all transparent.
All true.
But it's all out there in the open.
Objecting. So he rigs it so that he gets a clean election by the people he appoints.
Charlie Brown's objecting to a press release that, by definition, is something placed in front of the public. Right. Let's move on. The governor today appointed Loretta Rush to the state Supreme Court. Do you think he's taking your advice?
I don't think he cares what my advice is, but it's a good appointment for a variety of reasons. I mean, not just because she's a woman. She's obviously qualified, got a lot of juvenile experience and a lot of practical law experience practicing law, which is something that's been missing.
She said she's always enjoyed the opinions of Antonin Scalia.
Well, that's a little worrisome. But on the other hand, she's not a judicial activist, so maybe it'll be okay.
She worked at the same Lafayette law firm as Brent Dixon 30 years ago.
I'm trying to figure out, did the governor appoint any of those people before he picked her? All Lafayette, all Purdue.
Yeah.
Center of the universe.
Well, I think this is a great
appointment. And there's nothing else you can say about it. This is a great appointment by the governor, and he's given a lot of thought, and it was worth doing.
And you have to give Justice Dixon a fair amount of credit on this, because he's the chair of the committee.
And so
I assume his judgment on this is good.
Yeah.
I'll just say again, Indiana is so lucky to have the judicial selection process it does for the Supreme Court.
Instead of Ohio.
There are so many states around the country where it is just a very sordid, kind of ugly proposition.
It goes to the voters some places.
And here it is. You talked about transparency a moment ago with transparency with the lobbying that the governor, former governor, by that point, will be doing on behalf of Purdue. Indiana can be proud of the fact that it has a pretty transparent selection process, a nomination process as well.
You know, Jim, you've talked a lot about what the governor's legacy may be. Well, he's just cemented the last plank of a very, very important part of his legacy. He will have appointed three of the five Supreme Court justices, and they are people who will be on that court most likely for many years to come. So it will be in his image.
Loretta Rush is 54, and she told the governor she intends to serve a long time.
So if the Ethics Commission's decision is ultimately appealed to the Indiana Supreme Court, Ann's theory will hold true. There will be three appointees, a majority to rule.
Moving on once again. A sign outside an Indianapolis church intended to get people to vote is causing some controversy. The sign sits in front of the Greater St. Mark Missionary Baptist Church. On one side, the sign shows slaves in chains. The other side shows an image of the Marion, Indiana lynching of two black men in 1930. It reads, "Is this a reason to vote?" Pastor Joy Thornton put the sign up and says the historic images should not be forgotten.
People know there's been a price paid for the privilege of voting. And so oftentimes people get complacent and don't realize that persons have made a sacrifice. As a matter of fact, the ultimate sacrifice for such a precious privilege.
John Schwanis, will that sign be effective?
I think so. The pastor says he's concerned about complacency. How do you to combat complacency? You do something to shake people out of their comfort zone. You don't just have, some red, white, and blue balloons with a little thing that says, be patriotic and go vote, yawn, even though we all should. This is the way to get people talking, to get people thinking. And if you look at the IRS code as it relates to churches and other nonprofits, it's pretty explicit. You can do a get out the vote drive, you can do various initiatives to register voters as long as it doesn't explicitly favor one candidate over the
other.
And I don't think there is any explicit.
He's not telling people how to vote. Yeah. Some people in the neighborhood are bothered.
Well, it's certainly a graphic set of images. There's no question about that. And I can understand how that would make people uncomfortable. But I think that that point that he is making, and that he made so well in the soundbite that you showed, this is a precious right. It's something that we have not only a right to do, but a responsibility to exercise. And I think if he has achieved that, then good for him.
Hard to argue that there's over-involvement in our process, that there's not a need for more people to get involved.
That's right. And, you know, especially in this election, when there have been so many attempts at voter suppression by not allowing early voting and by having the voter ID requirements that are out there is designed to suppress particularly the minority vote. So I think it's a very compelling image, and it's good to remind younger people particularly of how hard the older generations had to fight for that right and why it should be exercised.
Do you approve?
I find that disturbing. I find that picture to be very disturbing, and I find it somewhat shameful to use that image to try to give people the idea that somehow we might go back to that kind of thing in this country. And the pastor was quoted as saying in the story that was in the Indianapolis Star that he's worried that people in his congregation are upset with President Obama because of his change in opinion on same-sex marriage, and he thinks that they're not going to vote because of that, and he's trying to shake them out of it with this image. I find it to be beyond the pale.
I don't think anybody's suggesting that they're going to go back to that.
Well, I mean, why would you put that out there?
Because people did die in this country
for
blacks to have the right
the
to vote.
That if you don't vote, it's going to be like that.
No, they didn't. That's
the people, would the people who criticize this as somehow over the line, criticize, say, churches and those denominations or churches that have, say, used aborted fetuses in photographs to argue that point.
I find that distasteful, too.
So distasteful, but again, those are designed to get
right.
at your...
Moving
your
on. On a
point.
Little lighter note, John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor, displayed his cooking skills this week on Wish TV's Indie Style. Gregg and his girlfriend, Lisa Kelly, prepared watermelon salsa, which he refers to as Hoosier caviar. The former Indiana House Speaker says all of the ingredients except the lime have been grown on his Indiana farm. He's from Knox County, which leads the state in watermelon production.
I do love to cook. I mean, somebody that, you know, aside from politics, cooking, love to can, love to, I'm extremely domesticated. My mother had three boys, and I'm the one they domesticated. I'm the only candidate of the candidates seeking the office of governor that has balanced the budget, that has abolished and cut taxes, that has increased funding for education, and has done it in a bipartisan fashion.
Yeah, there's a little more serious John Gregg after the cooking episode. Mike McDaniel, would you agree that he's domesticated?
There's so many things I want to say.
Oh, my. Your mother watches this program.
Watermelon salsa, really? I mean, come on. You know, I bet if this is a microcosm of the Gregg campaign. If you went to the Gregg headquarters, I'm sure there's a big sign on the wall that says, "It's watermelon salsa, stupid." You know, I mean, this is what their whole campaign's been about. It's about this kind of stuff and not about serious issues. And he continues to
do this. All of the candidates have been invited to come on a cooking
the poor country lawyer shtick. Have you ever been to his house in Sanborn? It looks like South Fork. He would lead you to believe he's living in some trailer down there or something, and you go
it's
around a corner and you
home.
See this
it's
giant
not trailer. Huh? It's called mobile home.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Here goes the Northern Indiana.
But you know, I think it's good. It shows his human side, and you know, he's talking about the issues, and that's a lot better than talking about
talking
family
about
impact statements.
He criticized
which is
the ice
cream guy is talking about
watermelon
family impact.
I just got one thing to say, Mike. That was one heck of a deflection from the
really
question. I mean. That was a good deflection.
Finally, Marion County is about to join the growing list of counties building roundabouts. The county plans to build six of them in the next 2 years. Federal money and local grants will pay for construction of the traffic circles first made popular in Carmel.
Through traffic studies, we found that roundabouts will help ease traffic, reduce crashes, reduce air pollution, but most importantly, improve safety.
Kara Brooks there from the Department of Public Safety. And Delaney, is this a matter of Indianapolis keeping up with the Joneses?
I think it's using the federal dollars for a good purpose. I actually had not, I was skeptical of the roundabouts when I first went up there and saw them, but they turn out to be a pretty effective way of managing the transportation in those key circles, so I'm all for it.
Jim Brainerd's got people copying this in Hendricks County and Johnson County. And
let's just make a proclamation here, Jim, that we'll call them Brainerds from now on instead of roundabouts.
It works. Hey. It's safer. It saves energy. It works.
It's not a matter of keeping up with the Joneses. As far as I know, Marion County has the biggest, bestest roundabout. Has since the early 1900s out on 16th. And, well, there's Monument Circle, but I was also going to say 16th in Georgetown. Yeah. There's a pretty good one out there, too.
Monument Circle's been there for a little while, but hasn't gotten near the attention that the roundabouts in Carmel have lately.
So maybe it's Brainerd copying off Ballard or whoever was the
Alexander
mayor.
Ralston.
Thank you.
Thank you, the designer.
That's impressive.
That was impressive. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. See you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.